And now the game where we ask notable people about things they never bothered to note. It's called Not My Job. If you want to write boring songs about how your heart got broken, you move to Nashville. If you want to write really cool songs about how you got drunk and broke somebody else's heart, you move to Austin. That's what Robert Earl Keane did back in 1980. He is known as the Austin singer-songwriter. All the other Austin singer-songwriters want to grow up to be. He is with us right here, Robert Earl Keane. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So to start off, you learned to play music in college, right? You were one of a childhood prodigies. You came to it relatively late in life.
Yes, very much later.
Yeah. And what was it that inspired you? You just wanted to sing of your heartbreak and rough and tumble life, or you thought it'd be a good way to make a living?
Well, I liked music, and I went to a lot of shows, and I saw people that went to shows and noticed that the girls were all watching the guys holding the guitars.
Right. You tend to write often very funny songs about people who live, they live hard, if not perhaps the most intelligently.
Right.
Rolling Stone once called you the Grateful Dead for frat guys. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I like it. Well, I guess it's songs you can sing along to, especially when you're drunk. Is that it?
Right. If you run out of mushrooms, you can drink Keystone.
Yeah.
I guess that's a. And the other thing is, I never sing in tune, so I guess there's some kind of comparison.
I understand there. tell me about. You came to Austin right away to start your career, and you've been here more or less ever since. I'm told that you went to Nashville for a while.
Uh-huh.
And how was that?
Really interesting. A lot of interesting people. And how many NPR stations are in Nashville?
I want you to assume, and we'll make sure this is true if it isn't, that nobody in Nashville can hear you right now.
Okay, fine. But, I mean, at Nashville, as far as, like, to play music and stuff, it's kind of difficult. I came from Austin, you know, playing every bar and every club that I could possibly, you know, hang my shingle on or put my PA system up outside of. You know, I played at Spanky's hot dog place one time, you know. I played at a garage sale one time here in Austin, Texas. So I wanted to play.
How long did you have to live with the people who bought you? I want this end table, and I'll take the singer too.
I didn't come with the chrome wheel covers. But so when I went to Nashville, I wanted to play like that, and I went to this place, and they said, oh, come here on Sunday. I know this sounds like a joke, but come here on Sunday, and we'll listen to you. So I came there, and there's a line out the door to play at this place, and I waited in line, finally played, and after I played, they said, we have approved you for our open mic night. I said, are you kidding me? And they went, no. And they said, you can come here and play your two songs that you choose Sunday a month from now. And I went, Jesus, I need to get a job.
Wow. and did you?
I got a job.
What was the job?
I literally dug ditches. I remember digging this ditch and hearing my dad's voice going, you know, if you stay with music, son, you'll be digging a ditch. And I was
actually digging a ditch. A metaphor no longer. It was real.
I was digging a ditch. And then I was working with one guy named John Henry on this dock one time. And he said, man, I know that you ain't like no dock worker. You're like one of them white boys that's like writing a book about being a black guy. I said, that's not true.
He said,
well, you don't look like you belong here. I said, well, I don't know what I'm doing here. He says, well, you could give me a ride home. Yeah.
and that was the basis for your famous song, John Henry, the Suspicious but Perceptive Dock Worker. I love that song. It's a great song.
Often requested.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
So, we understand you actually have a ranch here.
Yes, I do.
You have a ranch.
Uh-huh. My wife and I lived there for 10 years, and then when there was a point at the ranch where there's this very, very fine line between isolation and solitude, and right. and we found it.
What is that line?
That line is when you wake up one morning and you hear your wife with a deer rifle shooting at cats. And you step outside your back door, and she's just in her bra and panties with a deer rifle
shooting at the cat.
I said, man, this has gone some hillbilly. It's pretty hillbilly.
I was going to say, that sounds more like the thin line between isolation and Mississippi.
And I've been there, too.
There you are. You're watching your wife shooting at the cats in her underwear, and you think to yourself, I've finally made it, or I'm going to back slowly into the house and lock the door until she's over this.
No, I got out my guitar and wrote a song.
Did you really? Well, Robert Earl Keen, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
You have just been tapped for the Skull and Bones.
If the bars and concert halls of Texas are on one end of the American experience, then far, far on the far other end is the Skull and Bones Society of Yale University, the most famous and elite secret society in the world. We're going to ask you three questions about the club to which both George W. Bush and John Kerry belong.
I knew that answer.
You did that?
Yeah.
All right. Get two questions right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Robert Earl Keen playing for?
Robert is playing for Samuel Mintz of Austin, Texas.
There you are. Here's your first question. People think that Skull and Bones is a secret conspiracy devoted to vice, and of course they're correct. Evidence. It was founded in 1832 by a rich student with money made from what? A, the opium trade, B, stealing Indian land, or C, cheating at poker?
I pick one of those
you
three.
You do. That would be the point. Here.
I'd have to go with cheating at cards.
Cheating at cards.
I think those jail guys are always cheating at cards.
They might well have been, but the money used to found Skull and Bones came from the opium trade.
There it
Student
goes.
William H. Russell founded the society with money his family made from trading opium.
Now I'm down to two.
You're down to two chances here, but that's okay because you're a...
Was that the easy one?
You know, you're a singer-songwriter. You want to be desperate. It'll help. Next question.
Okay.
They try to stay out of the news, but sometimes Skull and Bones get some unwanted publicity. For example, they were recently sued for what alleged offense? A, stealing the skull of the Indian leader Geronimo for use in their occult rituals. B, frightening a student so much with their initiation that he had to sleep with the light on for all 4 years of school. Or C, drunken members persistently showing up naked at midnight at the local 7-Eleven asking for Twizzlers.
You know, if it was Austin, I would know this answer because they stole that big bug down there.
A big bug?
They about once every 2 years, they used to steal this giant bug from like this Terminex sort of place.
Oh, like a big fake bug in front of an exterminator.
Yeah.
And they'd steal it, and what would they do with it?
They'd keep it and probably smoke opium.
From it. Yeah. That's how they roll down here in Austin.
Right.
Opium smoking, bug stealing, songwriting, ceramics making, hemp wearing. The first one was they were sued for stealing the skull of the Indian chief Geronimo for use in their rituals.
Okay, I'll go with number one.
You go with Geronimo?
Yes.
You're right. That's what they did. Long-standing rumor that the members of the club stole Geronimo's skull a century ago, and Geronimo's heirs recently filed suit to get it back. Skull and Bones say they don't have it. They say that. This is very exciting. You get to the last question right. You win.
Okay.
Now, each member of Skull and Bones gets a nickname by which he is known to other bonesmen. When President George H.W. Bush was a member in the 1940s, he was known as Magog. That is the Bones nickname reserved for the Bonesmen with what distinction? A, the wealthiest member, B, the dullest member, or C, the most sexually experienced member of the club?
Oh, my God.
George H.W. Bush, Poppy Bush.
Right. Man, that's a really tough one, isn't
it? It is.
Yeah.
You'll be able to write a song about this.
You know,
sitting in an armchair.
Three.
They're going to go for they want sexually experienced?
I think three's the right one.
You're going to go with most sexually experienced?
Yes.
You're right!
Yes. Oh! Oh!
Bones members are required to relate their sexual histories upon initiation. Apparently, Poppy Bush went on at some length. By the way, and I love this, his son, George W. Bush, a former resident of this city, while a member, could not decide on a nickname, so he was and is known as Temporary. Carl, how did Robert Earl Keen do on our show?
He had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Samuel Mintz.
Well done. Well done. Robert Earl Keen is a singer-songwriter, the pride of Austin. He's recorded over a dozen albums. His new record, The Rose Hotel, will be out this fall. Robert Earl Keen, thank you so much for being with us.